Welcome, everybody, to episode 257 of the Metabolist 2 podcast, which features David.
And Ben.
Ah,
Ben.
Fooled you.
Yeah, a little bit of a stutter there. And Ben, what are we talking about tonight?
What are we talking about? We are coming to the... we're in the final stretch of our Ian Marta watch-a-thon.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not really a watch-a-thon, because it's... How long has it taken us? Like a couple of months?
The summer. Yeah.
The summer,
well, we're
yeah.
into the fall now, so...
It's a leisurely, watch-a-thon.
A stroll.
A leisurely stroll through season 12. And we have arrived at two absolute classics of the genre, which is the genre being Doctor Who,
yeah.
Genesis of the Daleks, and The Revenge of the Cybermen.
Wow.
Yes.
Which should be landmark episodes, with Cybermen in the latter and Daleks in the former.
Yeah, Return of the Cybermen after many, many years. Return of the Daleks after not so many years, but...
a season.
but certainly, like, ooh, Origin of the Daleks, which is always an exciting time.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But we have been watching these with a special eye on Ian Marta and Harry Sullivan and seeing how he gets on combating Daleks and Cybermen, you know, the two top monsters back to back.
Yeah, it was interesting to focus in on what Harry was doing on screen and how Ian Marta was portraying him, what he was given to work with. It started out with a bang. I think it was a really good start for the Harry Sullivan character in the beginning of Genesis 1.
Absolutely. Yeah. He's being a doctor. He's...
Yeah, like first thing, boom, he's checking the vital signs on a fallen soldier.
Checking the vital signs. You know, he's being military. They're in a war. That stuff he knows about.
Yep. Recognizes the radiation detection badge.
Exactly. And... starts out very, very strongly.
It's like a buddy film almost between him and the doctor with the landmine. He's stabilizing and holding it. And...
which is a thrilling scene, I'll have to say.
Yeah,
always has been. Very, very, very well played by both Tom Baker and Ian Marta, I think.
He's really, really strong in that first episode. They give Harry lots of things to do. I almost get like if Tom Baker was more like Batman, it's like the sidekick.
Right.
If this was a cop film, not Doctor Who, you'd fully expect Harry Sullivan to die midway through the film to motivate the doctor to finally dispose of Davros or something like
that's,
that.
That's a pretty nice way of putting it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, that makes, yeah, would make a lot of sense. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they had that really strong male bonded relationship, and Sarah's kind of the sidecar in that. You know, she's nice. I mean, it's a triad. They worked well together, but I really felt that chemistry between the doctor and Harry, and just... focusing in on the scene with the landmine, he's telling Sarah to get back, you to Harry, and Harry says, no way, I'm holding this, you have a better chance. And
right,
you know, thank you, Harry, after he steps off it, and Harry says, my pleasure. You know, it's that comfortable camaraderie between the two, I think, that's really personified in that first episode.
I think it speaks to their friendship in real life between Tom and Ian, they had obviously, they got on-screen chemistry. They got plenty of off-screen chemistry as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I think Genesis started out really strong for Sullivan, but then as the story progressed, there's just like less and less, and then more kind of an erosion of good things happening to Harry, or involvement in, even in the plot. And by the time we get to episode 6, he's really not much for him to do other than hold back the doors so the doctor can escape before Betan can blow it up.
Yeah. Yeah, it was interesting. Obviously, you know, very, very quickly, the team gets split up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always two and one.
Yeah.
And the initial split is the doctor and Harry. And then Sarah is obviously kidnapped by the Mutos first. And then off to the Thals. Yeah. And then she gets all Thaled up. in the missile silo, and weirdly, that sort of seems to me, having again watched this relatively recently, sort of then the kind of arc of involvement in the plot starts to kind of arc, the balance between Sarah and Harry seems to start to go very much in Sarah's favor.
Mm-hmm.
The whole missile base Sarah plot is just so compelling and exciting.
Yeah.
And she's so gutsy and, you know, basically mm-hmm. amazing in it. I mean, climbing up that scaffold. I mean, Elizabeth Sladen climbing up that scaffolding in those high-heeled red boots. You've got to, like, blimey, Liz, that looks really difficult and dangerous.
Yeah. Yeah.
She gives it her all. And that seems to kind of tip the balance plot-wise. I mean, it's very well directed. I mean, both Genesis and Revenge are very well directed by David Mahoney and then Michael Bryant. And you're right. I mean, by episode 6, I mean, Harry is just kind of standing around.
Yeah.
I was really noticing when the Doctor is having his moment of doubt. Should I destroy the Daleks? The debate is between him and Sarah.
Yes.
Sarah is, you know, I guess the Doctor is the conscience at this point. Sarah mm-hmm. is the one who says, like, blow up the Daleks. And
you must complete your mission from the Time Lords.
Exactly. Blimey, Sarah. Okay. I guess you're an expert all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And so Harry's just like, yeah, fine. What? I'm just here for a bit.
He's along for the ride, basically, at that point.
Yeah. It's a shame that, for me, Genesis could go on as long as it wants. Basically, it's such a great story. Mm. But it's a shame. Mm. And, you know, when they're being tortured, you know, it doesn't really matter. You know, there's two of them.
Mm-hmm.
There could be just one. It's a shame. I mean, having talked about Betan, it's a shame that they couldn't pair off Harry with Betan or something in some plotty way.
Precisely, yeah. That handoff. So, like, in the second episode, Martyr has fewer lines.
Yeah.
And he makes up for it by being on camera. He does a lot of what I would call presence acting. You can really see
which he's very good at.
Yeah.
You can see he's moving his eyes and his lips. You know, yeah.
He's paying attention, reactive.
Exactly, yes.
And is still being the sidekick to the Doctor, you know, the whole no T. Harry bit. But that transition between sidekick to damsel happens with the clam scene, basically, in Genesis 3.
Right.
And watching it this time around, I'm compelled to think that maybe that would have been better if the Doctor had stepped into a giant clam.
Had been clammed?
Yeah, because the line Harry gives is, why am I always the one stepping in it? Which would pair very well with the landmine in the first episode. So I think I would have had the Doctor, if you're going to do the giant clam, which, you know, has been demonstrated you can cut out pretty easily, I would have had the Doctor step in it. I think the line, why am I always the one stepping into it, would, you know, it's a nice follow-on from stepping on the landmine in part one. And then Harry gives him something to do for action there, too. And the Doctor really doesn't need to save Harry. I don't see the point, I guess, for that.
You mean you should have let him be eaten by a giant clam?
No, I don't. I'm joking. What I'm saying is, I think it should have been role reversal.
When this was
filmed in the 74-75 timeframe, that they needed to give less to the Doctor. I mean, you're going to watch the Doctor for obvious reasons, but giving the companions more things to do, making companions more heroic, making Harry more heroic like they did with Sarah, I think was warranted for the caliber of companion and actor that Ian Martyr portrayed.
So here's a couple of thoughts. So this is something I didn't do, mm-hmm. which is, have you ever watched the omnibus edition of Genesis?
Yeah, we saw it in the theater, the cut down.
Yeah. Did I see it in the theater? Yeah, I did. Jeez, yeah,
yeah.
I've forgotten about that. Well, I wasn't watching it for Harry. Mm-hmm. It would be interesting to rewatch that and see how much Harry stays in the picture and how much he doesn't stay in the picture as the story goes on. And I suspect, as you've just said, most of his stuff, you know, when he's not, you know, actually literally standing behind another character, is going to end up on the cutting room floor like the clams.
Yeah.
I'd forgotten that. That got a release in the cinema, didn't it?
It did in the States. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
When
they're releasing the box set, the Blu-ray. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I went to
went
to the movies in Seattle and saw that. The other thing, and this is just my crazy fan theory that I've suddenly thought of, is that what really happened is that Harry died. He was eaten by a clam. And for the next three episodes, he's a ghost, which is why he doesn't really interact with anybody or he's really around that much. No, I'm right. He was completely clammed. He's just like a skeleton in a cave now in the Lake of Mutations. He's just a human skeleton.
He's just a ghost in the Matrix.
He's just a ghost. Yeah, exactly. And then I suppose he's then a ghost in the next two stories as well. So that kind of blows my theory out of the water. Yeah. Anyway, yeah.
No, he does have stuff to do in episode 3. I mean, he slugs the guard when they're going to rescue Sarah from the thralls.
Yeah,
and, you know, it's handy with a rifle. I noticed the doctor's out. Like in the first scene when the doctor at Raven's headquarters, he sweeps the gun off the off the table. It's Harry who catches it.
Oh, yeah, that's a great scene.
Yeah, and again, in 3, he's the one holding the firearm. The doctor hands it off to Harry. Harry's the gunman, effectively.
Yeah, yeah, he's the Ilya Kuryakin of the of the two. I mean, I'll go back to, you know, I'd have written a whole another episode with Harry and Betten, because, you know, Harry is obviously presented as a kind of an old school, you know, male chauvinist, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Betten's like a gun-toting, you know, gorilla lady.
Yeah.
There could have been a lot of fun business between those two, and I don't know what that fun business would be because I'm not a writer, but, you know, one can imagine. Because, I mean, it is actually also interesting how, for reasons that are not fully made clear, Sarah suddenly starts deciding that she wants to dress up as a gorilla as well.
Yeah.
I guess it was the mid-70s and everyone was doing it. Yeah, I mean, I think that would have made a nice pairing if they could have thought of some plot for them to get up to. I mean, Harry,
just anything.
Yeah.
I think giving him involved in episode 6, helping Betan, would have been a brilliant move.
Do some bombs, make some bombs, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, well, I mean, he demonstrated that he knows how to splice the detonator wires and stuff back when they're wiring up the Khalid mutation room. So he could have been working on that.
Yeah. Well, they could have been, I don't know, they're...
Doctor and explosive expert.
Yeah, someone could have kicked over a bucket of Davros germs or something, and everyone would have got ill, and then he could have cured everybody or something. I don't know. There's a whole other episode we could have been made of Harry making friends and helping the Thals. Very much, you know. Obviously, as we made friends and helped the Thals, you know, back in 1963. 64.
Yeah, more involvement with Betan and crew. The one thing that they do give Harry, he does have a nice scene where the doctor's walking back through the tunnels after the Khalid dome has been disintegrated, blown up, that Harry rescues him from the Mutos being attacked. And
right,
the doctor's kind of down in a fetal position on the cave floor, and it's Harry who kind of drives him off. So that's, you know, it's a heroic moment, but it kind of gets lost in it.
I mean, there's so much heroism going on and also appallingness in those last couple of episodes that, yeah, I think it's easy to lose that.
Yeah, at that point where they separate, when he sends Severin off to help Betan, if he would have sent Severin and Harry off to help Betan, or even have lost Severin somewhere along the lane and give that role to Harry.
Good idea.
That would have been a good juncture point. I think having both Harry and Sarah being tortured, again, I feel that it erodes the Harry character a little bit.
Right.
You know, in part 5, both he and Sarah change clothes. Harry is in the collared black uniform when he's at the door guide. And so it's kind of interesting
that
they change off camera. Kind of weird bits with continuity. You would have expected him to, I guess I would have guessed if we didn't have the time ring subplot going in leading into Revenge of the Cybermen, he probably would have stayed in that collared uniform for the rest of the episode.
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting that Harry has a costume, which is apart from the duffel coat going on and coming off, and obviously it's cold on Dartmoor, so absolutely understood.
Mm-hmm.
He's always dressed the same.
Yeah.
Where obviously Liz, being a girl, is dressed beautifully in all different kind of things because she's amazing.
Yeah.
It would have been really fun to have Harry dump the cravat and the naval blazer and spend the rest of the episode in a kind of, you know, in a black Khalid uniform, which would have made him very Ilya Kuryakin and kind of made his character slightly, because, I mean, obviously with the cravat and the, you know, and the sideburns and the naval blazer, he's very much coded as, you know, naval idiot.
Hmm.
And to put him in a different costume where he's presented as maybe something slightly different, that would have been interesting to see, I think. And you're right. You know, I mean, I think, Severin, who's kind of the Wester of this story could easily have been sacrificed doing something heroic. He could have thrown himself on a bomb or,
right,
you know, or a landmine or something. Or maybe
saving Sarah from being shot from the Thal's guards as they climbed the scaffold.
Exactly. All of those things. And then all the things that Severin was up to, Harry could have been doing, which I think would have been a better use of Ian Martyr's time.
Yeah, because Severin was sent to go recruit Mutos and ultimately came up with nothing. And if that was the outcome, Harry could have come up with nothing as well.
Yeah, Harry, if the result is not recruiting any Mutos, as you just said, Harry could definitely have done that with no problem at all.
And like you said, have him stay in the black uniform, but keep the cravat. That would have been
Very elegant.
Very dashing. Yeah,
very dashing. Exactly. I mean,
sort of like, well, I'm going to change my clothes. I'm going to have my signature maroon cravat there.
Yes, exactly. Or maybe he could have tied it around his forehead like Rambo.
There you go. Been 6 years ahead of his time there.
Exactly. Yeah. John Rambo before his time. So yeah, you know, it's always a pleasure rewatching Genesis because it's just so great and it's complete. I know everyone like, ooh, Terry Nation, but and obviously rewritten by Robert Holmes, whatever.
No, I don't think so. If you compare this script to the next one with Revenge, which Revenge has all sorts of Bob Holm fingerprints all over it, and Jerry Davis didn't like the script pretty much after Bob Holmes got a hold of it. I think Terry Nation, Trusted Hand, I feel very, very little touches of Bob Holmes in here. Maybe the Seventh Seal beginning on Gallifrey of the Time Lord kind of seems Bob Holmesy, but other than that, the pacing, the way this is
absolutely, that was my point. I mean, the pacing, the cliffhangers, the just relentless action. You know, the characters standing around. Okay, make one of them stand on a landmine for a bit. Then
right,
the characters moving through a cave. Let's have one of them be attacked by a giant clam. You know, it's unnecessary but completely entertaining action. Just bang, 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 does not let up at any point. And, you know, watching all six episodes in a row, you're kind of breathless by the end.
Yeah.
You know, you've been through the kind of hellish. It's a really interesting object lesson in the idea that the Doctor's companions are having fun. Yeah, they're not having fun in this at all.
No.
At all. This is horrific stuff where no one is having any fun, including the Doctor and his companions.
But yet that relationship between Harry and Sarah in Genesis, there's a tenderness, there's a care and affection that you saw carry forward from Ark in Space and in Santarin Experiment. And there's a really nice little scene sometime in part four when the Doctor, Harry, and Sarah are going through the caves and they hear some noise. Sarah goes, "What was that?" And the Doctor goes, "Oh, just one of Davros' experiments. We better stick close together." And Harry asks, "You're not scared, are you?" And Sarah says, "Of course not." And Harry's response is, "Well, I am." And I think that was just a nice bit.
Very nice, yeah.
Sarah's putting on a brave face, and she's not going to admit that she's afraid, but Harry kind of gives her and him permission to be a little bit scared of the creepy crawlies in the cave.
Right.
There's a nice congeniality between the two, friendship between the two, which isn't reflected in Revenge, and we'll get to Revenge. But tonally, this is the combination from Ark through Genesis with the Doctor, Harry, and Sarah. That is a really nice triad relationship, and it really isn't carried through in the writing in Revenge. So I don't know what happened because Bob Holmes wrote Ark and he rewrote Revenge, but there's something that failed carrying on that relationship started in Ark and strengthened in Santarin Experiment and Genesis that just isn't working in Revenge at all.
Yeah, I mean, he has a lot to do in Revenge. I mean, I'm quite impressed by his the stuff that he gets up to, especially in, I think, what must have been a challenging shoot in Wookiee Hole.
Yeah.
That I find impressive. But he does seem to be rolling back to the more of the kind of buffoon character that, you know,
from the get-go. I mean, you go from the buddy film vibe at the beginning of Genesis. By the time you're in Revenge of the Cybermen 1, the Doctor's just making Harry the brunt of all the jokes, you know, with the time ring. Glaring at him when his arm gets kind of stuck in the door, and, you know, Harry goes, what did I do?
Yeah.
He did nothing. And it comes down to the Harry Sullivan's an imbecile, and it's sort of like, no, he's really not.
No.
But that's what fandom kind of is left with, and it seems more of the production team saying, we're writing him out at the end of the season,
right.
Which effectively Zygon's was.
Right.
So let's start having the Doctor go off on him a little bit. Let's soil that chemistry.
Yeah, I mean, you know, give the character reason to leave, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, even. You know, this is, I mean, as I said, I really query the kind of they're having fun concept, but, you know, they don't seem to be friends anymore.
No.
In which case, why would he stay?
He seems to be Mickey'd a bit. I mean, it's sort of like he's not the Doctor's pal anymore. He's more of a, you know, like I say, Mickey character. He's along for the ride.
He's a foil.
Yeah. And it's not a good look on Bob Holmes as script editor for ruining kind of the concept that's, they had been developing for the last, basically since Robot. And it really came to forefront with Terry Nation's writing in the earlier parts of Genesis.
Right. I mean, do you think, and we don't know this, but I mean, do you think this was Ian Marta going, listen, I don't really want to do this for much longer. Can we start to ease me out?
No.
Or do you think it was just, you know, Hinchcliffe going, okay, I'm new. This is what the previous lot saddled me with. I don't want a bloke hanging about. I want the Doctor and I want a girl. And that's what I want the dynamic to be. I want it to be like John and Katie, and everyone else is kind of superfluous. That's what I think worked. I don't like what happened in the 60s. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. My fan wisdom, you know, the conventional wisdom, I think is... Hinchcliffe and Holmes both thought that Harry was not necessary because Tom Baker was in his 40s and can do his own stunts and do his own action. And so it's always harder to write scripts for three main characters or two companions and the Doctor rather than just the Doctor and a companion. You always, like you said earlier, he works better when it's either the Doctor or Harry and Sarah, when he split up with somebody. You got to always split them up to kind of drive the narrative. But if you don't have to split them up, if it's the Doctor and Sarah, then you can kind of move along on that at a faster clip for your storytelling. You don't have to find so many things for everyone to do. I just think they weren't aware, or they weren't the pace at which you have to churn these out, they weren't taking time to get perspective on what they actually had in hand, and just thought, well, Martyr's done after Zygon's. That was the end of season 12, effectively, before it was carried over to start season 13. Robert Banks Stewart, hello, please write Sullivan out in this episode.
Right.
The decision was probably made by the time Holmes was plotting revenge, and instead of...
Holmes was plotting revenge. You've just stumbled into an Arthur Conan Doyle novel by mistake.
Yeah. Yeah. Where Holmes turns on Watson.
Exactly. He plots his revenge.
Yes.
I think that's a reasonably good analysis, you know, and obviously the people who are in charge are the people who are in charge. I mean, I think it would have been... You know, it's an interesting thought experiment to start to, you know, move Marta through season 13 and see what he gets up to with pyramids and evil planets and et cetera, et cetera. I mean, he pops back again, I suppose, in androids, right?
In a real way. Well, he spends one episode being an android of himself and then a little bit in part four, which we'll get to.
We'll get to,
As himself.
Yeah.
But if you have a medical doctor, an officer, you start out... In Robot, he's looking after the Doctor in the sick bay. And then in Space Station Nerva in Ark in Space, he's dealing with Phyra, who's a med tech from, you know,
the future,
the 30th century.
Right.
And Harry could have learned something, or, you know, modern space medicine. And then you could have seeded it in that, well, how does, you know, transmats, because now he's transmatted several times. He transmatted down to the surface, and he's, you know, a bit scrambled Morse message, all that.
Right.
He could have asked a little bit, like, how does it know how to reconstitute myself? You could have laid that seed
right
back, narratively back in Santarin experiment, and you could have then had Harry come up with the idea, Doctor, what if we just transmat Sarah down to Voga? Would she still have the space plague?
Right, and, right.
You know, the Doctor is heroic for wiring it back and bypassing the Pentelian drive and whatever and getting Harry and Sarah down to the surface of Nova. But you could have lent more heavily on Sullivan's medical know-how to come up with the idea in the first place.
Sure.
But beyond name-checking that they're the new med team, that Harry's a doctor and the doctor is a doctor of many things, giving Harry something to do more involved with medicine would have been better. But instead, he's just the butt of the jokes. His relationship with Sarah is so prickly in this, and she's had it. She's done with Sullivan, and we didn't, there's no indication that that was the case beforehand. I think
right.
it was more friendly. She's just kind of like, he's criticizing her ankles and she's, you know, kind of rude and snippy to him. It just doesn't work well for a Harry Sullivan story.
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, that's a good analysis. I mean, he said it is obvious that they've, that they're less interested in having him as a part of the story, as a part of the plot, and they're more interested in having him as part of the joke, as part of the kind of the comedy of the show.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think maybe it speaks to the, you know, them not really wanting that kind of character. I mean, you know, as written, he's an old fashioned character. As I said, you know, he's a, you know, square jawed naval officer, you know, a Bulldog Drummond 39 step style 30s hero that he was sort of ostensibly starting out as. And maybe that just wasn't modern enough for Hinchcliffe and Holmes. You know, that's a character they didn't want. And that is a character that they maybe felt should be laughed at rather than developed. And maybe they were wanting something a bit more contemporary in their analysis. And obviously, as I said, they're trying to churn this stuff out on a weekly basis.
Yeah.
The character was put in case they got Mr. Pastry by mistake to play the Doctor. Now they've got someone leaping around breaking his collarbone instead.
Right.
You know, it's time to get rid of him. It's just too complicated to, you know, we've just had to rewrite an entire story because, you know, Jerry Davis doesn't get it anymore. So, you know, what else people don't get is they don't want this kind of character anymore. So we're just going to get rid of him.
Yeah. I mean, instead of developing that way, they could have developed him more like they would with Jamie, becoming more of a bloke. And we commented on this in a previous episode that we haven't had this relationship between the Doctor and a male companion.
No.
Where they're blokes together since Jamie and Troughton. And I think it's a combination that works pretty well. And just, I mean, I'm probably beating this to death, but the level of where Harry is sidelined from the action in like episode 4, when Harry is down on Voga, Sarah's gone up to the space station to try to help the Doctor. It's the commander of Nerva Beacon who's talking to
right.
Tom over the space channel when they're trying to blast the Cybermen out of the space. And when Nerva Beacon is aiming to Voga, it's then Harry's turn, and he doesn't get to talk to the Doctor. He talks to Sarah, who's really snippy back to him, saying, yes, we're aware of it, we're trying to get on it. And just the hostility between Sarah and Harry in this episode, I had never noticed before, and I think it's only because I was focusing in on watching Martyrs, what Ian Martyr got to do as Harry, and
right.
whatever, so...
Right. No, you're right. I mean, it is interesting. I mean, I have to say, I didn't notice this as closely as you have, but, you know, thinking, you know, I watched it at the weekend.
Yeah,
that makes sense. It makes sense. And it's a shame, really, in some ways. But it's not a shame in other ways, because when we lose Ian Martyr, we gain that amazing Liz Sladen, Tom Baker relationship that is, you know, the kind of becomes the archetype of doctor to companion relationships, which kind of every other team tries to recapture in some kind of way in, you know, with varying results.
I think, yeah, we're still trying that. RTD definitely is making an attempt with that with Shudigatwa and...
Right. Millie Gibson.
What's her name? Millie Gibson's character. Yeah, but I'm trying to think of what her name is.
What is she called? Don't know who she's called. That's funny, actually. It's funny with the...
Ruby. Right. Ruby.
No. Ruby Sunday.
Ruby Sunday.
Ruby Sunday. Yep.
There you go.
It is...
Yeah. Sorry.
This is just a complete... Sorry, carry on. Yeah, I was going to do a complete sidebar,
but
anyway.
But, I mean, all of RTD and all of Moffat, I think, was trying to capture that again. I think it was John Nathan Turner did the Crowded TARDIS with Davison, but then after that, he's doing the Doctor and Perry, the Doctor and Bonnie, the Doctor and Ace. I guess not Bonnie. Mel. But... break Doctor Who. Basically, Hinchcliffe and Holm break Doctor Who, or the flexibility of Doctor Who, because this is what, aside from Chibnall, who again does the 80s Crowded TARDIS with the fam, this is the paradigm. And it's an echo of what they were doing with Joe Grant and Pertwee.
Yeah. Well, you get the lead actor becoming, having an immense amount of chemistry with the... I don't know what you, the secondary lead actor or something, you know,
and co-star,
the co-star. And once you have that, it makes a lot of sense to run with it, you know. And I suppose, obviously, John got on really well with Katie. They really had a great relationship. Tom got on really well with Liz. They had a great relationship. They're both in Liverpool, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
You know, and Tom's ostensive, as we're told, complete resentment of Louise Jameson when she turned up is kind of instructive there. I mean, they worked very hard to make that relationship function properly. But it was it's interesting what a, you know, what a different character they wanted Leela to be from Sarah Jane. I'm just kind of thinking how the Harry Sullivan character would have worked in those season 13 stories.
So Planet of Evil would be the first one, and I don't see how he would work in that one at all.
No, I mean, obviously there's a medical issue, so I don't know what he could have done.
Yeah. And then we have Pyramids of Mars, and that really is a two-hander between Sarah and the Doctor. I don't see a role for Harry in that one at all.
Yeah, I mean, you could have got rid of Lawrence Scarman and had Harry be that character, though, you know, obviously you then lose that terrifying scene when brother confronts brother. Yeah, it's like Horus and Sutek, one kills the other.
You get him in the Android Invasion, and, you know, more on that later.
Yeah,
Brain of Morbius
again.
I could see him working in the Seeds of Doom. That's where...
Yeah,
it's a unit story.
Exactly. I mean, we're denied the Brigadier. It would have been wonderful to have had Harry back. I mean, you know, it's a medical story.
Yes.
Harry could have been seconded to the Antarctic base.
Yes.
You know, as a medical officer. You know, it could have been a British, you know, our British Armed Forces expedition or something. And, oh, look, it's Harry. Harry's, like, working on the pod.
Well, yeah, and he could have said, you know, this is beyond me, but I know a chap who could help, and he calls.
Exactly.
Instead of the World Ecology Bureau, it's Harry.
Yep, there you go. Okay, all right. Now we're fitting Harry into everything effectively. Yeah, I mean, he works well on Earth, basically.
Yes. He works well in ARC, Santaran Experiment, which obviously is Earth, and then Genesis. It starts out really well. I think what you needed to tell the writers is this is the buddy, you know, the cop buddy type film vibe that you want between Harry and the Doctor. It's the Doctor and the sidekick and the pretty girl. And
right.
I think if you're going to continue on with that, you would split up Harry and Sarah. They would go off and do their thing, and the Doctor would do his thing, and the duel, two companions equal one Doctor, the Harry and Sarah can rescue the Doctor when he's in a tight scrape, and then when Harry and Sarah are in a perilous situation, then the Doctor can rescue him. So, I mean, you can continue on.
Right.
It'd be interesting to see as Big Finish goes on with their recasting of, you know, season 12, Harry and
right.
Sarah, what new stories they're going to tell, because pretty much up until this point, it's been retellings of Genesis of Terror and then a retelling of Revenge. So I think this winter they're coming out with new stories. So we'll see how they develop the character.
Yeah. Are you listening to those? Are you getting those?
I haven't, because they've been rehashes and I'm waiting for the new stories.
But you would something new.
Yeah.
Right. Because the new Harry's dropped in on other stories, right? I'm so out of touch, I'm afraid, with Big Finish. But I'm pretty sure they've had him wander into other stories, but not in that team. I mean, that team has not really had anything written for them.
Yeah. So what else is Christopher and Nalern's? So it's coming out here this fall or winter, Doctor Who, The Curse of Time, which is after being dragged through a rip in the time vortex, the TARDIS returns to Dr. Sarah and Harry to Earth. They are in medieval times, but something strange is afoot. The villagers live in fear of the sinister Brotherhood, an order of monks that uphold the sacred laws. Then there's Faustus Black with his troop of traveling players. What connects them is a terrible secret hidden in the Forbidden Forest, a cage which nobody has ever returned.
Ooh, spooky.
So this is a Johnny Morris penned story, but yeah, they're back on Earth. So this takes place between Revenge and Zygons.
Cool. All right. Well, so we shall see.
It's a new story, I guess. So I think it's the first one new with that time team.
I wonder if Naylor's going to be at Gallifrey One, actually, because he's been a couple of times. I'll have to check the guest list, and maybe there'll be some upcoming snippets. I'm sure there'll be upcoming snippets anyway, but maybe from the Harry himself.
Yeah, with Tom not traveling and Liz sadly passing, season 12 isn't quite represented very much in Gallifrey One.
No, exactly not. Yeah, they need to get Hinchcliffe out.
So it'll be interesting. They have another Harry Sullivan story, the Storm of the Sea Devils, with Tom and Naomi as a companion and Harry Sullivan. It takes place in India, but again, I haven't given that one a listen because I'm mostly curious with the Sarah, Harry, and
the Sarah, Harry,
Tom
dynamic.
Triumvirate. Yeah.
Yep. Triad. Yep. Whatever they are, Silurian Triad. Well, there you go then.
Yeah. So started out strong, but then I think the production team just decided that they were done with Harry, and maybe Ian Martyr, you know, I think he kind of soured on the role because of what, you know, it had potential, but then, you know, to be the butt of the jokes all the time.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I think, you know, there's
giant
there's,
clammed.
Yeah, I mean, he got clammed. I think there's an interplay there. You know, you get the path. The part is less written for you. You're less attracted to the part because the writing's not writing towards you in the way you want. And then you're losing interest, so it gets even less written towards you. So, you know, I think there's an interplay there, maybe.
Yeah. I guess next time we'll talk about the last two on-screen appearances of Ian Martyr, which would be Terror of the Zygons and the Android Invasion.
Indeed. Didn't we do the Zygons recently?
I don't think we've really talked about it.
Or did I just watch the Zygons recently?
Maybe you did that.
I think I just did that.
They took it off iPlayer. They took off both of the
Robert Banks Stewart's, exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's
so. So physical media wins the day again. So.
Thank you, everybody. I am yet again vindicated by my collection of houses groaning with physical media.
Yeah.
For what one reads, it's a regular thing with Banks Stewart. It's a regular renegotiation. It's nothing like an Unearthly Child. Mm-hmm. Thank goodness. But you know, if you wanted to watch an iPlayer right now, you couldn't.
Yeah.
So. So
you wouldn't be able to see the end of season 12. And yeah, I've always thought the Harry Sullivan arc fit more perfectly in season 12. And it's kind of a shame that Zygons was carried over to kick off season 13. So, more on that next time.
More on that next time. Exactly.
All right.
Well, goodness. There you go. Right. Yes.
Well, thank you for listening to episode 257 of the Metabulous 2 podcast. I have been sticking my foot in the giant clam with Ben.
And I have been yet again struck by my intense fear and worry that there are giant clams hiding under my bed and having to put my feet, tuck my feet under the duvet in case the clams come out and grab them.
That's good.
Which they would.
They would.
They're ambulatory.
They are.
Exactly.
They're fast moving.
Yeah. I mean, they should bring those clams back. I mean, Moffat's always bringing back, like, landmines and blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, clams.
Yeah, hand mines. Like, clam mines, yeah.
Clam mines.
He name checks them.
Does he? I don't remember
I
that.
I think he name checked it in the Sorcerer's Apprentice, is familiar.
Or with the clams, right.
Yeah. That was a good one, where Missy kicks Clara into the Dalek sewer. That's a lasting memory of that one.
Yeah, that should have been done a lot earlier, in my opinion, but there you go. All right.
All right. Next time.
Next time. See you. Okay, bye-bye.
So what is Tubi? You mentioned this before. I have just
clueless. You don't have Tubi?
No.
So Tubi, have you got like a Roku thing? You know,
mm-mm,
the
mm-mm.
You don't. Mm.
No.
Anyway, so if you have like that kind of here are all the streaming channels thing,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Tubi is it's free because they have commercials.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically as if, I was describing to someone the other night, it's basically as if someone had taken a Blockbuster from 1997 and just downloaded, just put all the VHS tapes up. And it's amazing. I mean, there is nothing they don't have up there.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I watched, what's that weird Terry Nation movie? I can't remember. Anyway, they have a bunch of good stuff on there. And if you ever do get yourself a Roku or something, Tubi is basically, it's your one-stop shop for obscure movies.
Nice.
And they don't really care, basically. It's just like, here's some movies we've got. They don't ever seem to take stuff off it. They don't ever seem really to put stuff on it that much. It just kind of exists, and I love it. It's really got everything that you need.
Good back catalog.
Exactly, an excellent back catalog. Now it's going to bug me about Terry Nation movie. Hang on.
Oh, go look.
Terry Nation movie. I'm just looking it up on the interwebs. And soon the darkness.
Never heard of that one.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. It's some people go. Young girls go hitchhiking in northern France in the 1960s with mm-hmm. Non-hilarious results.
Oh, horror film.
Yeah, more kind of psychological, styly horror rather than kind of horror.
Uh-huh.
It's a weird one actually. It's like. Anyway, yeah, so.
Huh.
But if that's something you fancy watching, there it is.
Huh.
It's right there on Tubi.
Yeah, yes. Okay. And soon the darkness.
Yes.
All right, I'll make a little note of that.
Exactly. And this is weird. And IMDb is telling me that it was remade in 2010 and and the action relocated to Argentina.
Huh.
Interesting.
I guess that more spooky than France, I guess.
More spooky than France. So, And Into the Darkness is a 1970 British thriller film directed by Robert Fuest. So you might know him from The Avengers.
Yep.
And starring Pamela Franklin, Michel Dautrice, and Sandor Ellis.
Huh.
Written by Brian Clemens and Terry Nation.
Huh.
Yes.
He doesn't have a lot of movies, so that's his interesting.
No, it's kind of an outlier.
Uh-huh.
If I knew more about it, I'd be able to say, the film was, said to Wikipedia, the film was made by the same production team as the Avengers television series, written by Brian Clemens and Terry Nation, both who contributed to the Avengers, as had producer Albert Fennell and Robert Fuest. So I guess it's, like...
Yeah, they probably needed a change.
Yeah, getting the gang back together, make a scary movie.
Yeah. Interesting.
Anyway, so that's
learned something new about Terry Nation.
Yeah, if you haven't read the biography of him is really good. I have that. You can get it from the library, but it's well written and well researched, and he was an interesting guy.
Huh, very good. Yeah,
interesting Welshman.
Is that the Turner book?
Yeah,
Alan Turner book.
Yeah, the man who invented the Daleks or something. I can't remember what it's called.
Yeah.
But yeah, wow. And cool. Interestingly enough, and soon the remake is on Tubi as well. So I wonder whether an American-Argentine mystery horror film.
Huh.
Oh, it's got Carl Urban in it. Ooh. Okay, I might have to put that on my list.
You know what you're going to watch next?
I have to watch Run Silent, Run Deep next. But yeah.
Okay. After that.
Indeed.